Hi, thank you for listening to this episode, and thank you always for your support with the podcast. Sorry for the long gap between the last episode and this one, but we hope you enjoy this new talk. This episode was originally recorded in two sessions, the first one on June 8th and the second one on June 16th.
+81.
Hi, I'm Alicia.
And I'm Mizuki.
And this is +81. How was the march on Saturday?
So there was originally a march the week before I went, so on May 30th. That was a march around Shibuya that was that was in solidarity with BLM, but it was also addressing police violence against a Kurdish man who was videotaped being arrested and subject to unnecessary violence by the police. But that seemed to be a pretty hastily organized march, and even I, or maybe Miz, knew about it, but I didn't know about it until after the fact. And there was also a second march, the one that I went to, that was organized by the same person, that was also kind of in solidarity with BLM, and that also wanted to address police brutality issues within Japan. So we first gathered around Hachiko in Shibuya, and by the time I got there, I got there right when they told us to be there, so at 2:45, and we started marching at 3:30, they already had people speaking on a big megaphone, and a lot of people were gathered around, and people were waving Antifa flags, and people from all ages and demographics were there as well. So it wasn't just foreigners. There were also Japanese people. There were tough looking, bald Japanese middle-aged men and older women and kids that I I don't know their names, but I definitely recognize from my high school. So it was a really big mix of people, and for a bit they did split up into two different groups, where one was kind of more BLM focused and the other one was a bit more Japan focused, but they basically converged into one big march. I heard that there were about 500 people at the Tokyo one, and so we marched just around from where the Moai statue is, towards Namikibashi. Namikibashi is also, I think, where the Shibuya police office or police headquarters is, but we didn't step into the police headquarters or the office or their courtyard area like they did the week before, because they did that the week before and a protester was arrested for trespassing. But they did address that in the march as well, and they were kind of if you look at the footage, basically the protester who was arrested was pushed or pulled by the police into the private property. So it's not he was trying to trespass or go into the police's property. But yeah, I think a lot of people were watching. When we were walking underneath all the hodokyo or the walking bridges, everybody was videotaping us on their phones and taking photos. And when I looked on Twitter afterwards, random people were kind of oh, I went to go buy a suit in Shibuya and they were doing a demonstration. So I think there was a really good kind of awareness raising event, whether or not, actual outcomes policy wise come out of this. So I think that was definitely a win. But yeah, one thing that kind of, I guess it bothered me was how much press was just there and kind of in your face. So I because I've been reading so many articles from the US about how it's important to cover your face and so on. I had my mask on, I had a hat, I was wearing relatively nondescript clothing. But some people, half maybe, didn't have a hat or anything else other than just a mask. And when reporters were taking photos, I hope and I trust that they're, picking photos that aren't identifiable, but it wasn't really they were asking our permission if they can take our photograph. Which kind of just bothers me in general when people take photos of other people without their permission. Yeah, so overall, pretty good.
Fuck the police!
Fuck the police!
Fuck the police!
what was the role of the police in these marches?
Yeah, so we were pretty much like we had to walk on the road, like the car road, and we were sandwiched between like the police and the sidewalk. So the police would walk kind of in like the middle of the lane. So we would have like half a lane, and they kind of became like human cones to like make sure that we like didn't spill into the street. And they would like call to each other, like, you know, we have to like make them rush for this crossing, or like there's going to be a left turn coming up, we need to speed it up, slow it down type of thing. But overall they were like pretty casual about it, and like people were shouting like fuck the police, so overall professional.
Very interesting. Yeah.
And like the riot police were there, but they were like in the car and like not in sight, so it wasn't like a scary presence. So they weren't like in like full metal jackets like they are in the States. Like they were just wearing their like blue uniform with like a yellow vest.
But it's really interesting how disciplined and controlled by the police it is, mm-hmm. the march, I mean, the yeah. march itself, and how much space you're allowed to occupy and mm-hmm. I mean, and also the space that you're limited to, I guess, is like one lane of the road, which is usually how it is in like most marches in Japan.
Yeah, and usually there's like police in front of you and behind you and like beside you.
Yeah. What power do the people have when they want to get angry, or if they have to get angrier?
Yeah, well, like they don't, I guess. Yeah, and I think this was also like an issue that was like with this particular march, because there were so many foreigners who like just don't have rights in Japan. I think, yeah, like they're taking on a lot more risk, and like that's also a reason why they can't be more aggressive as well.
Yeah, that was also another interesting thing to see, the kind of hesitation to join the march organized by the Japanese organizers. I thought was really interesting, and I think is a topic that needs to be discussed or to be figured out if we are to have like a unified force of people protesting. I think it also asks the question too of like, in the case of Black Lives Matter protests specifically in Japan, where there are very little numbers of Black people in Japan compared to the rest of the people, just like who gets to organize, I guess, Black Lives Matter protests, you know, because I feel like it's not like in America where it's easier to center the marches around Black people. But yeah, it's just interesting to think about who gets to take the lead, I guess.
Yeah, so I think this is like a good start. Like, you know, this is definitely not the end goal. Like we said, like there isn't going to be a policy change from this, but it's doing the role of bringing the problem to Japan versus seeing it as like a third party issue. Well, like I think a lot of people don't remember this or like weren't alive, but there's definitely this kind of like cultural fear towards protesting because of like the riots in the 60s. So yeah, I don't think anybody is really looking to make these marches any more demanding.
I find this interesting about Japan is that a lot of people, and even Japanese people themselves, don't see themselves as people of a protest culture, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
But if you look at history, there is a protest culture in Japan.
Mm-hmm.
Like you said, with like the 60s and even before that, mm-hmm. like there is a history of people protesting in Japan. So it's not like Japan is this like apolitical place where protests don't happen, and there have been violent protests, but I think it, because of the 60s protest era, I think after it there was like a really big, I guess, big stigma against riots and violent protests, and so I guess people didn't really do that sort of big protesting, I guess, until more recently in 2015 with the security legislation bill, but maybe, well, my hope is that the protest culture is coming back to Japan. But it might really depend on the issue.
Yeah.
I think there's also ways to go as in terms of understanding the importance of protesting and why we protest. And I think for Japanese people, like I see this in a lot of my Japanese friends who have only grown up in Japan with a Japanese like education system. They don't understand why people loot. I guess they don't understand the need for nonviolent protesting versus, as opposed to peaceful protesting, like just peaceful protest. And they don't understand why people riot and why people loot.
Right.
I think they just see that as like a, oh, let's not be violent thing. And so I think there needs to be an understanding of that, I think. I think if people see that protests work in Japan, Japanese people might change their views, I guess, on protesting.
Yeah.
I think there just haven't been enough examples in our lifetime, I guess, of instances when protesting worked, I guess.
Yeah, like a lot of barriers, but I think what I want to say is that like Japan doesn't not protest because the people are like quote unquote peaceful or because like, you know, people are uninterested. It's like there are some real barriers to people trying to change things, whether it be like, you know, slap being legal or like foreigners not having rights. And I think like just saying like Japanese people aren't interested is just really oversimplifying and like kind of insulting as well.
I think also one thing I think in terms of Black Lives Matter movement, I think one thing Japanese people don't really yet understand is that in America and around the world that like racism isn't just on an individual level. It happens on a systemic level. Yeah. And I think that's like a key point that I guess if you're talking to your friends or your Japanese friends about this, I think is really a key point to help them understand, I guess, why this protest is going on. And it has been going on for years and years and years.
This is now a week later since so today is what, Friday, June 19th. So I went to the march last weekend, so the week after the one that we initially talked about, at Yoyogi Park. So right off the bat, like a lot of things that were different was that there were a lot more people at this one. The one at the Yoyogi Park, there, I think most articles are estimating like 3,000 to 3,500 people went to the march. So that's like five times more than the people who went last week. So like when we were lining up at Yoyogi Park, like we lined up by like the NHK building, but like there was a big line of people and like the line was so long that it took an hour for the last people at the end of the line to actually start marching. People were already coming back from the march by the time like the last people were like set to go. There wasn't as much like annoying press this time, or maybe it was just like a bit more diluted so I didn't notice them as much. But it was a lot more like family friendly this time, I feel too. Like there were like young couples with like pushing baby cars. How do I say this? Like the demographics were also like a lot more diverse. Like they were kind of like middle-aged white people there as well, instead of just like young white people plus like a wider demographic of like other like ethnicities. So yeah, like I think last week's was much better, and it's definitely like feeding off of the energy from like the other marches from other cities in Japan.
Yeah, I think 3,500 is a pretty big number for Japan in terms of Japanese protests. How did you feel about it?
It was good. It was like I was a bit worried that not as many people would come because it was like raining or like it was just like muggy weather, but a lot more people came. I felt like this time there were a lot more organizers as well. Like there was one girl who was going around with like the temperature checking, like you know, like that toy gun looking thing. So there's like a person like kind of like randomly spot checking people's like temperature. And there was a lot more like grouping going on. So they would try, this happened in the last March too, but they would try to group people in like a couple of hundred and let them go. But I felt like because there were more groups, it felt a bit more organized. But I felt like I was a bit less organized in that, like, there weren't any speeches beforehand and there weren't any, like, closing remarks. There weren't any, like, Sprechchöre or, like, the call practices, like, the chants. Like, there were no chant practices. There weren't any, like, chant, like, scripts going around either. So if it was your first time going, the one before, the first one that I went to was a bit more beginner-friendly. 'Cause I think they tried to clarify their goals and try to get, you know, by giving out the script for the chants and stuff, like try to tell people like what their roles were. But this time it was kind of just like, okay, we're just gonna, everyone just kind of improv your chants and we're just gonna show up with numbers instead of like with intent. I don't know how to explain it, but like maybe there were more organizers, but just being like a random participant, I felt like there was a bit more expectation in the first one, while the second one was just a kind of like a more yurui, more
decentralized.
Yeah, it was a lot more decentralized, probably just because there were just so many more people there.
Mm-hmm.
And as soon as we were done marching, they all told us to just like go home. Which was a bit of a bummer, because I wanted to have like, I don't know, like closing remarks or like have an opportunity to like thank the organizers. Yeah, I think there's just too many people. And yeah. But I think the second march there were a lot more Black organizers involved. Last week's, at least on social media, it seems like there were a lot more Black organizers and like Black international students who were involved. And they also had like codes you can use at the convenience store printers to print your own pre-made Black Lives Matter poster that were also made, I think, by like Black organizers. So I'm glad like this past week they had more Black people organizing and being central to it, because I think I talked about this before, but the one that I went to first during the speeches, it felt like at times the conversation kind of deviated from Black Lives Matter.
Yeah, and I think that's also true of the first one, because it was more directly about like the Turkish man, mm-hmm. right?
Who yeah.
was a victim of police brutality. So that's definitely the case. Then I agree, like I've been pretty impressed to see that most of these marches have been organized by Black people in mm-hmm. Japan. Yeah, and I think that's a great thing. That they're at the center of organizing. I've been thinking about kind of the difference between protesting in Japan versus protesting elsewhere in the world. I guess we'll use America as an example. Yeah, and just how, compared to the protests in America, just how much the protests in Japan are like limited and regulated by police. So that's what I've been thinking about. And I found this article by the Japan Times that says Article 21 of the Constitution guarantees freedom of assembly and association, as well as freedom of speech. Street demonstrations and public protests are, however, still subject to regulations. Each prefectural police department requires permits for the use of public roads and parks for a march or rally. And I just thought that's kind of how weird that is, like, to see that, like, technically under the Constitution, you have the right to an assembly, or you have the right to assemble, and there's, like, the free speech clause, and that's, like, on a national level, but on, like, a prefectural level, you're still limited of that local region.
Yeah.
And also, yeah, I guess how this article phrases it, like, you need to have permission to take up space in a public area
mm-hmm.
that is, like, it's public, so you're supposed to be able to gather there, but you still need permission from the police
yeah.
who are, like, tools of the state.
Like, what is freedom of assembly, then, if you can't gather in a park?
Yeah, because of this, Japanese protests are, like, almost always gonna be peaceful.
Mm-hmm.
You'll probably never see it become violent or escalate to the extent that it does in America. I think there's a few reasons for this, but I can list some. So the first one is that the Japanese police, unlike
unlike the police in American cities, are not militarized to the extent that the U.S. cities ones are. Like, we don't have officers come out in, like, riot gear, and we don't have, like, tanks that come out into the streets. And so there's no, like, tension in that sense of, like, things escalating to a level that is so bad.
Right.
That it becomes, like, a war.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then the other, and another thing is, like we said, like, the steps to having a protest and organizing one, it renders the protest peaceful, or, like, in the process of trying to hold a protest, your protest kind of becomes peaceful, because, like we said, for example, like, you need, like, a permit, like, you need permission from the police, and sometimes you have to provide them with, like, more details, such as, like, the route you're gonna walk. So that means the police are gonna know where you are, or, like, where people are at all times, and so they can just, and they can regulate you in that sense. And then this one, I think, is the big one, in that for the protests that are going on, that have been going on recently, that have to do with the Black Lives Matter movement that comes, like, straight from America, I think the energy for the movement in Japan, where Japanese people are so detached from what goes on in America, and they don't really see it as their problem, the energy for the protests here kind of requires on non-Japanese citizens, or, like, people who are more aware of what's going on in the States, I think.
Yeah.
And that probably won't be a lot of Japanese people. But what I mean is, it's, like, a collective effort from both Japanese people and from non-Japanese citizens in Japan. And that's where, and that's how you had 3,500 people come out, and 3,000 people in Osaka. But what that does is, because there are non-Japanese citizens marching, and non-Japanese citizens don't have the freedom to exercise the same rights as Japanese citizens to participate in protests, for protesting specifically, they actually don't really have the right to protest in Japan if you're a non-Japanese citizen.
Right.
And so that's why to hold protests that are inclusive and encourage, like, foreign nationals to join, such as the Black Lives Matter movement, the march has to be peaceful. So you're not putting non-Japanese citizens at the risk of arrest.
Yeah.
Yeah, and this is also why the language that's used to describe these protests kind of has to change into it being a peaceful march, or, like, a demonstration rather than a protest, so that non-Japanese citizens feel safe enough to join and participate. And yeah, and that's why you saw a lot of these Black Lives Matter marches advertised as peaceful marches rather than protests. But it's just limited in that way because of, like, legal reasons. And so in that sense, Japanese protests are really limiting, or, like, restricting.
Yeah, like you said, like, I feel like it's restricting in, like, a few ways. Like, number one is what you just said, like, legally it's restricting because non-Japanese people have to rely on a peaceful march versus a protest, because they really could get A, deported, or B, get their visas, like, renewal interfered with, or they could, I know, be thrown into, like, the immigration center, or, like, maybe put into jail, not heard from again forever.
Yeah, because Japan has such a notoriously cruel criminal justice system for foreign nationals, especially.
Like, I think, yeah, if the listeners aren't, like, familiar, like, in Japan, even if you are, I think, a Japanese citizen, you can be put in jail for up to 23 days with no evidence, no nothing. Like, you're not even allowed to call home. Like, people will just think that you're missing. And also with a 99% conviction rate, like, you're probably going to get a forced conviction out of you. So pretty much if you're put into that situation, there's no getting out of it. So it is, like, a really big deal. It's not like you spend 24 hours in jail and get out with no bail, like it is in most US cities. But also, yeah, so they have those, like, legal restrictions, and also the momentum that would help bring in more Japanese participants is contingent on the non-Japanese citizens who don't have as many rights. and for them to not only bring the energy, but also put their own livelihoods and immigration status on the line to organize the marches that would potentially encourage the Japanese citizens. So I feel like it's kind of like in a weird like chicken or the egg situation of like, okay, so like, do we want the enthusiasm, but we can't have too much enthusiasm. But when in reality, like the Japanese people just have to step up and like, I know, go read some international news or just like pay attention to other, like what's going on in the US or with the other Black Lives Matter marches in other countries and try to kasanero their situation. So try to, I guess, impose or put themselves in the other person's like shoes, I guess, which I think is frustrating, because I think, for example, there have been efforts within Japan to try to import some of these ideas and import some of the information, but like we saw with the NHK depiction of the Black Lives Matter movement. But I feel like there, although there are opportunities and people have attempted to import this kind of information, oftentimes they get it so wrong.
I wanted to go back to the peacefulness of it, because that's what I was thinking about recently. And in comparing protests in the US versus Japan, we've seen how protests work in the US, like, and even in the recent weeks with like Minneapolis, like disbanding their police force and stuff like that. And like, and that was because of this like constant protesting and like, Not just constant protesting, but constant protesting in like huge numbers of people, and it wasn't always peaceful. You know what I mean? When you compare that to Japan, where like protests are usually peaceful, and it's regulated in such a way that it's like purposely made to look smaller than it is. Because these marches are peaceful, they don't really disturb the peace. And a lot of the times when you're marching, even if the total number of people are like pretty big, the police will divide you into groups of 200. So you're kind of restricted to one lane.
Right.
Like one lane on the side of the road. And so you're not really taking up space as a big group. So it's kind of like a long line of protesters, but it's like divided. It gets cut into groups of 200. So you'll probably never see marches that take up whole spaces in like on the road that like stops traffic because it's made to be that way. So that kind of, I think, limits the power that protests and marches have in Japan to enact actual changes within any system. Because I think at most what you're gonna do is raise awareness and start a conversation, which isn't like bad, but it doesn't change anything system-wise.
Yeah, because daily, it's still letting the system act as it does. It's still letting daily life persist. So if you want to close your eyes to it, you can still do that. While in the US, like, you couldn't ignore what was going on, and that's what prompted the changes.
And so the question I have then is, like, how do we get protests in Japan to be that, like, to use it as a tool to change things in the system? Or is that impossible because of the nature of the way protests are in Japan?
I've thought about that before, but more in the context of strikes and how some Japanese people view how strikes can affect people. So, for example, at my NPO, we have a union specifically for caretakers and nursery school, or hoikuen, so daycare providers for children. And they've been working in like horrible working conditions, not being paid. The facilities are dangerous, etc. So they went, so some of the people who are in this union went on strike, indefinite strike. And some of the critiques that I think they actually got, they were just like worried about, was like, you're so irresponsible, like, you're letting these kids not have a place to go, like, now the parents have to take a day off, or but that's the point. It's it is disturbing daily life, but the caregivers aren't just doing it because they are evil and because they don't want to work. It's because their working conditions are so bad that they don't have a choice but to give these families a hard time, and potentially these kids don't have anywhere to go. But that's supposed to tell you how grave the situation is. But like, I think there is a big pressure to not be the one that stops the entire system from falling apart. So I think that's definitely still feeding into it. And I think I talked about this last week too, but I definitely think that the kind of trauma from the 60s is still alive today.
Yeah, because protesting is so taboo now mm-hmm. in Japan, but there is a history of protesting in Japan. It's not like Japanese people aren't angry people. Like, mm-hmm. we are angry. Like, we can get angry. But I think it's just the legacy of the 60s protests. Mm-hmm. It seems like it made protesting like a taboo thing and voicing your own opinion or like going against things.
Because I think, yeah, like back in the 60s, people like made barricades and people were like somewhat armed. People had like helmets and like body, you know, makeshift riot gear.
I mean, it was definitely not nonviolent.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I think one thing also that happened recently is like protesting on Twitter. I guess because of COVID, people like a few months before were like, when maybe they would go like outside the Congress or whatever, or outside the Diet, they stuck to Twitter and it actually had a really big effect. This one policy that Abe was trying to propose, and I think he now stopped trying to propose that bill. But that protest on Twitter was like one of the biggest ones I've ever seen. Like, it was like a hashtag that was trending, but it was, I think at its peak it was like at 2 million tweets or something like that, and that was like, I've never seen that many tweets about a political thing in Japan. And but I think that kind of showed some Japanese people maybe who weren't really too much into protesting that, like, it showed them that protesting actually works and mm-hmm. voicing public opinion, like, it actually works, and so protesting is not a lost cause, you know.
Yeah. But because there's so little protections for activists and they're exposed to getting sued as an individual by such big corporations or like potentially the government, it is still very risky for individual people to protest in a impactful way, because it's called like a slap lawsuit, but like those things are banned in the US. It's basically when like a company sues somebody knowing that they'll lose, but with the aim of draining the defendant of their like money for like lawyer fees and things like that. So I think, and that's been at least like with Okinawa, like in a lot of documentaries that I've seen, it talks about how a lot of activists have just been drained by these slap lawsuits. So I think if you're a person who was like interested in maybe protesting or interested in getting involved, like seeing how directly harmed you can be, I think is a bit scary. But I think, yeah, online protesting has definitely picked up.
I mean, I think this is an important conversation to have in terms of how to keep the movement alive for Black Lives Matter in Japan mm-hmm. and how to go beyond peaceful marches and trying to change the system in Japan, because Japan is not free from anti-Black systems, right? Yeah. And institutions, and like historically, and I guess even now, Japan is like a country that perpetuates anti-Blackness in many forms. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So it's important to keep this movement alive and keep the momentum up, I think.
Yeah.
But in doing that, I think it's really important that we keep centering Black people mm-hmm. and Black activists and Black voices.
Black lives matter!
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 Thanks for listening to this week's episode. So, as you know, Alicia and I are two non-Black people talking about this, so please also go listen to the Black organizers of the marches around Japan. There's a great episode by Curly and Kansai, and the hosts were two of the organizers of the march in Osaka, and they talk about their experiences in organizing and leading the march. There's also another episode on Tokyo Speaks featuring the organizers of the march in Tokyo. We'll link both of those episodes in the description, as well as other podcasts and resources by Black people.